to the beautiful historic Chicago Cultural Center on this really lovely, surprisingly warm week like this after such a brutal winter, and I'm very excited to be here with all of you. I'm Danielle Susi. I'm the host and curator of the 6 Points Reading Series. The Poetry Center was established in 1973, and we're excited to continue the promotion of poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. Why did I just lose my spot? Sorry. We do that primarily through two different programs. The first is our hands-on stanzas program, which puts working poets in Chicago public schools to teach poetry to students. And the second is our reading series, which brings us to tonight. The 6 Points Reading Series is a monthly series we've developed to showcase some of the most innovative and talented contemporary poets. And tonight we're excited to hear from Stuart Dybeck and Sandra Marchetti. Our first reader, Sandra Marchetti, holds an MFA from George Mason University and teaches writing at Elmhurst College outside of Chicago. She's the author of Confluence, which is available for pre-order in the back, which is her first collection of poetry from Sundress Publications. Eating Dog Press also published an illustrated edition of her essays and poetry called A Detail in the Landscape. And Sandy's first volume, The Canopy, won Midwest Writings Center. I'm so sorry, I am tripping over my words. Midwest Writing Center's Mississippi Valley Chapbook Contest. Her poems and prose appear in the Journal, Subtropics, The Hollands Critic, Sugar House Review, Mid-American Review, Blackbird, Southwest Review, and elsewhere. Please join me in welcoming Sandy Marchetti.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is really a treat. This is better than a slice of lemon cake. So I'm mostly going to be reading from that debut full-length collection of poetry tonight, but I'm also going to read some new poems because there are a few people in this audience who have heard the book many times and have been patient with it over the years. So we'll start with the book and then we'll kind of move on. This is called Autumn Damask. Come, let me show you the blown open roses of nearly November. Geese land in a card deck shuffle. Their fingers sweep the ground, then plait down the body. Lie fetal on the ground. In the Midwest, you will see the world split, a lidded eye drawn open as if by marionette leads. The willows are four crowns pointing down. Comfort is when you are tethered to a place you can't move fast from anyway. Roam the ground where you are mapped, flat and free, beneath this sky, this new sea. Okay, so the book in many ways is a love letter to our sort of surreal and dizzying, maybe vertigo-inducing Midwestern landscape, which you probably got in the first poem. But I really fixate on horizon lines and sight lines because Chicago is so full of straight lines and squares. So here's another one in that vein. The Return. Figurations of mist at the turn of the corner. Figurations of time at the bend in this pause. And that's from Octavio Paz translated, that's not me. Beyond the body itself is the thin blue line, the sky folding back on its spine. I saw today the paper gold mists, the terrible last burnings off of morning. I have an idea that you ate me then, and slid belching through the fog. You slicked my breast on past your teeth and tasted my unsalted skin. I'm small, I know when I've been swallowed whole, been rounded out gold and beaming, become a curve in your smile, the element of light broken on the tide, the start of day. Sir Laird, you miss it, craning away from verdancy. Pause in this place while I glaze you. My head tilts a direction you can't read. Green leaves drape a frame of velvet. don't move. You can't see. You are a strange portrait. Like Manet, I strain each stroke of cup and nape to show I can, then muddle you toward the boughs to sway in wilderness already named. Okay, so another thread that's kind of pulled through this collection is this idea of domesticity. What does it mean to be sheltered away from this sometimes harsh landscape, as we all know how harsh this landscape can be? So here are a couple poems about going inside the door. Walk through. I walk through our home and mind to make a cup of coffee. Greeting leaves in the picture window, I seem slow to grind the beans. A crystal dish, the things I love, the rooms gleam white and clean. Our desk is neat, between your bills, my calendar and pen, the floor plan gauzed beyond a screen. Be tidying when I come. Dust me off, another thing. I bring to you the late romances, the walls suffuse in cream. Our room, your face, the porcelain, light unbuttons the dream. I itch my eyes open to fix on minnows squirting downstream. Okay, now for something slightly more violent. Are you ready? No? Watch out, we're gonna be chopping vegetables here. Know if you can handle it. Okay. Orange bouquet. The cauliflower encourages shock. A fat bulb you loosed from the stock, grown all summer to give itself up. The dark farm in diorama crams between each branch. I brush caterpillars into the sink and geese wink out. Smatter dirt on my hands in their landing. Without a knife, each flower clicks clean from the stem, as you said it would, in a backward crack, a snap of the head. My mom thinks it's funny. She's morbid. Okay. Well, so I think I'll read one more from the book, and then we'll move on to the new work, which I promise you're going to like. Yes, I'm selling you on it. This is the last poem in the book. It's sort of a sonnet, sort of. One secret. So not to miss the moment of you, I stay my gaze. Hit play on the slapdash shrieked recorder of now. The blue table slides from under your pupil and out toward mine, motions in sign, the language reminds, we will know each other's bodies now, know how they will change. Dusk flares the bones grown, so I rub your stomach until you sleep. I knit my breath to yours, as if you were a child. The confluence of rhythms begins. It is only sound and meaning. Sound and meaning. Okay, so I have a new project I'm working on, and since it's spring training and both teams in town have high hopes this year, I'm gonna read a few poems from my baseball project. So most of the poems are about the Cubs and Wrigley Field in one way or another. So if you're a Cubs fan, I'm right there, third generation, diehard solidarity with you. Some of these are dreams, some of these are stories from my father. Some of them are other things, but I'll read a few of them. This one's called Over Sheffield. I'm playing baseball in the Garden of Eden. Scratch that. I'm writing baseball in the Garden of Eden, where old cars ride street corner curves in our square city while vendors hawk peanuts. I'm writing baseball out of the Garden of Eden. Clouds sail the blue-gold lake, a tincture Titian never mastered. Players skim the surface grass in pinstriped cottons. Blue hats, blue socks, blue numbers. I'm riding baseball out of the garden. I touch the field to liquefy it, a prism painted deftly on my eye. I'm writing baseball as it never was, from a Sunday on which we won it all. Okay, here's my Wrigley Field sonnet. Frame. Tucked in the western grandstand, imagine Wrigley. A sliver of light, orange-green beams gone between golden arches as scoreboard plates clink into place. The fourth inning haze filters the sun, a yoke yawning itself undone in the upper deck air to curve against each pillar, straining my gaze in aisle 228. My father gripes and wipes his nose through an April game, the team terrible again. Yet players lope over this green hill, and our minds agree to rise and clap for them. Okay, so there's a few older folks, I should say wise and mature people in the audience tonight. And if you were a Cubs fan in the 60s, the earlier part of the 60s, you know there are a couple big events from that decade. We're going to talk about one of the terrible ones, just one, which is the 1965 Sandy Koufax game. So that's what this next little sonnet piece is about. It's very short. I picture my father in the dimmed attic. Wind presses the panes lightly back, his stomach slack to the radio, crackling innings past. The sound of Koufax slaps the glove above. The scoreboard plates catch each frame in their clanking. Okay, I'm just gonna read a couple more. And I'll kind of switch projects here. And I'm also working on this project about poetic influences and imitations. So we're often told that as writers, as we grow, we stop imitating the old masters and start writing in our own voice. But this project sort of questions that. How valid is it to imitate people and call it your own work? So instead of really imitating style, what I'm doing is just name-dropping people in poems. So this one name-drops two poets, Edward Hirsch, who's obviously a Chicagoan, or was, for a very long time, and his famous poem, Cotton Candy, about walking across the Chicago River, one of the bridges over the Chicago River, with his grandfather. And then another poem, The Untelling by Mark Strand. So two old white guys and me in this next one, Breath. Tonight the library is near silent, just a soft blown breeze the ducks receive, a brittle wind within the stacks. I want to read Strand's The Untelling, or of Hirsch's loss as he crossed the Chicago River, drawing in the cotton candied air with his grandfather. I want to hear the suck of the air through the vents and breathe, suffocated at the sweet of it. And this is my last one. I hope I'm not taking too much time. Okay, good. All right, wonderful. So this one actually, this sounds really fancy, but it's not. Someone commissioned me to write this poem, which never happens. But I have a friend who's an artist, and he wanted to do an art installation in the Batavia Park District. And he said, the poem has to be 150 words. And I said, who's gonna write the rest of them? Because my poems are really short. So he said, you've gotta stretch yourself. It has to be 150. Because he was gonna put it on banners in the park as you walked along, and it needed to be long enough for a good walk. So this is the poem I came up with, and it's also one of these imitation poems. It pulls from, this time, Ted Hughes' The Thought Fox. Thank you so much for coming. I have books and broadsides in the back if anybody's interested or just wants to chat and give me some feedback on these new pieces. You can tell me where I'm going wrong. So here's one last one for you. Thanks everyone for coming out and bearing through me to hear the big show. So Shadow. Across clearings, an eye. Ted Hughes. Mushrooms on the trail indicate You haven't roved this prairie of late. Soft sponged and pink, they're sweet as the berries, ripped in your teeth. Foxes are opportunistic feeders, notes a sign. I never mind the goldfinches who arc my breeze and swap big blue stem for trees, patiently trilling each leaf, those last full masts of September. Zigzagged grass ripples from a felled trunk, sunk in its thatch to rot. Past piles of branches spoiled to mash, a flaxen hay, wherein I catch your gleam. Spun gold, you are a long-bodied beam, slinking past imagined houses down to the stream. Hidden to your scruff in the gathering dusk, I hold and release your stare, that of a silver-eyed murderer who smells breath in the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandy. I'm from Boston, so I identify with the baseball struggle. And I know you guys just got some people from Boston, so congrats. We'll see what they do for you guys. Our second and final reader of the night is Stuart Dybeck, as Sandy called the big show. Stuart has published 2 volumes of poetry, Brass Knuckles and Streets in Their Own Ink. 2 collections of his fiction, Ecstatic Cahoots and Paper Lantern, were published simultaneously by FSG in 2014. His previous books include Childhood and Other Neighborhoods, The Coast of Chicago, a one-book, one-Chicago selection, and I Sailed with Magellan. His work is widely anthologized and appears in publications such as The New Yorker, Harper's, The Atlantic, Tin House, Granta, Zoetrope, Plowshares, and Poetry. Dybeck is the recipient of many literary awards, including the Penn Bernard Malamud Prize for Distinguished Achievement in the Short Story, a Lannan Award, the Academy Institute Award for in Fiction from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, a Guggenheim Fellowship, a Whiting Writers Award, the Harold Washington Literary Award. This is going to go on for a while, you guys. 2 fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts and 4 O. Henry Prizes. His work has appeared in Best American Poetry and in Best American Fiction. In 2007, he was awarded both a John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Fellowship and the Rhea Award for the Short Story. He is the Distinguished Writer in Residence at Northwestern University. Please join me in welcoming Stuart Dybeck.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not to go through that list. Thanks for coming. It's a pleasure to read with Sandy. I'm going to start with a couple of sonnets. It's my favorite form. For me, it's what the English language has that's on the level of the Japanese haiku. I'm going to read poems from places where I've lived, not traveled to, but actually lived. So these are set in the rural Midwest. First one's called Their Story. They were nearing the end of their story. The fire was dying, like the fire in the story. Each page turned was torn and fed to flames until word by word the book burned down to an unmade bed of ash, wet kindling from an orchard of wooden spoons, snow stewing, same old wind on the gramophone, same old wounds. Turn up the blue dial under the kettle until darkness boils with fables and mirrors the frost to the quick before fogging with steam. And dreams rattle their armor of stovepipes and ladles. Boots in the corner kick in their sleep. A jacket hangs like a question mark. Scythe. In the barn, demoted to garage, the axe and a cherry stump can't be budged. Daylight perforates siding despite the battered armor of license plates. Corroded colors, same state, decay. Their dates the only history of whoever tilled the soil. And left as a welcome the skull of a possum nailed to the door. and the trail of lime to the torn sack in a corner where cobwebs festoon a scythe. Rusted sharp, it sings when he grips its splintery handle, swings, and crowns topple from Queen Anne's lace. The supplicant prays for birds before an ancient icon of a stray cat. The inbred need to pray is what makes God necessary, and not, she says, the other way around. Beyond that, it's all mystery, so don't question why man creates gods that demand sacrifice, condemning mortals to spend their lives trying to praise Godhead into mercy. Better instead to ask the frog to bless the fly, and once the cheese is in the trap, to beg forgiveness from the rat. This poem's still in the Midwest. The next one won't be. But they're both narrative poems, and I'm reading them with Phil Levine in mind. He died not long ago. He was a great friend, one of the poets I most admired, our neighbor in Detroit, and he could tell a story like no one else, both on the page and off. This is called Nowhere. You know, what else I'll say about this briefly is that I grew up on the South Side in Little Village, where I lived. It was laced with trains and the beautiful music at night when you'd wake up in the dark, or in the summer night when it was too hot to sleep and the windows would be open. You just hear that kind of mournful train sound going by, and it was really beautiful and addicting. We played on the tracks. It was the wilderness, and we didn't realize, we weren't schooled enough to know that railroad tracks are flyways. But you'd walk, climb up onto the viaducts over the fences, and there'd be pheasants and all manner of birds up there. And so wherever I am, I always kind of seek out railroad tracks and just walk down the tracks. The poem reflects that. It's called Nowhere. He walks as if stepping through a fallen ladder, tall enough to have once reached heaven. Today it reaches a line of boxcars abandoned on the rusty tracks to nowhere. Haze smolders from cauterized scars of bum fires. He crosses a charred trestle above a rapids of shards and startles a dog pack pulling at a ball of rags. When he tries to reason, they bristle, bared teeth more menacing for their smiles, eyes enlarged with rage rather than fear of the rebar he's picked from weeds and cocks like a bat until their circle tightens and he slashes so that at least air whines. In the dull light, the bedspread, snatched from a clothesline and shredded, resembles a trembling child, though if it were, he's sure the dogs would not have left it. A jolt like a 12-gauge blast scatters the pack. Bloodied rags rise on woolly legs, bray, and totter into underbrush. He stands paralyzed, listening for the boxcars to couple again. But they stretch boundless, silent, undisturbed. If they moved, he'd climb aboard. Inspiration. Finally, down an askew side street of gingerbread houses held up by paint, were bony kids crowded around the body of a cripple who'd been trampled when the shots rang out. I spotted a taxi with a raised hood. The driver was adding motor oil, which was leaking into the gutter nearly as fast as he was pouring. I threw my suitcase in, and we started down the mob streets, him laying on the horn, yelling in Creole, driving by necessity with his head craned out the window. Cracks ran the length of the windshield, where a bullet left a crater that had vaguely resembled the shape of a pineapple. And since a cabbie could never afford to replace the glass, he painted the crater instead. Pineapple yellow with the bullet hole gleaming at its center like a wormhole emitting another dimension. And once he'd painted the pineapple, wasn't it not only logical but inspired to see the cracks that ran from it as vines. And so he painted them a tangled green that turned driving through the streets of Port-au-Prince into racing blindly through a jungle. But he wasn't finished yet. The vines grew flowers, rose red, orchid, morning glory blue. And to the flowers came all manner of butterflies and newly invented species of small, colorful birds, twining serpents, and deep in the shadow, the mascarad, black, slit, golden eyes of what may have been a jaguar. I lived and taught school in the Caribbean for about 2.5 years, and that's where these poems are coming from. Overhead fan. Beneath an overhead fan, a man and a woman slatted with light, leaking through green shutters are unaware. Let me start again. I haven't read this one for a long time. Beneath an overhead fan, a man and a woman slatted with light, leaking through green shutters, are unaware that they too are turning. The shadow of the blades imparts a slow rotation to each still object in this hazy room. And the wobbling fan chirps at its mounting, as if the gecko doing push-ups on the mirror is counting time. Otherwise it's quiet, but for the whir above the sweaty friction of their skin. Her mouth gapes as if emptied of speech, her closed eyes can't see the shadow that plays across her eyelids and breasts, and that later will play across the man's memory. And though their bodies now press as if pinned together by centrifugal force, they feel the spin as if they're hovering, not like the souls of the newly dead are said to hover above their abandoned bodies, but like the hummingbird above the red lips of the hibiscus just beyond the shutters, or high overhead the black blades of a frigate bird centered on extended wings above the Gulf Stream's azure gyres. So the place in this one you'll recognize. It's one of my favorite names from the city. Ravenswood. Pigeons fold their wings and fade into the gray facades of public places. Flags descend from banks, silk slips floating to beds, hips thrust like those of lovers as workers crank through turnstiles, waiting for the Ravenswood Express at stations level with the sky. They shield their eyes with newspapers against the dying radiance. That lull between trains, when stratified fire is balanced on a gleaming spire. Night doesn't fall, but rather all the disregarded shadows of the day flock like blackbirds and suddenly rise. Those are all uncollected. I'm going to finish with a couple of poems from a book called Streets in Their Own Ink. Sirens. Tonight they seem to be calling from afar, conversing like chained dogs carrying on an argument from blocks away. Open windows still gaping from the night before. And yet a fire truck screams, "More flame!" while the warning of an ambulance ricochets off the carrots of dark panes. A network of stained crazing like the backside of the moon spreads beneath the tea leaves through a china cup in which the future is contained. But would the black Mariah be allowed if its soprano struck the perfect pitch of glass? If its aria were graphed by a crack traveling the luminous city, reflected along the cliffs of the Gold Coast? As dreamers know, it's possible to rush in silence towards disaster the way one rushes towards desire. They used to call, they used to call paddy wagons black Mariahs, but they don't call paddy wagons anymore. What the hell do they call them? I don't even know. The cops. What are they called? Ah. All right. Well, I'll catch up. No, I won't. Well, you know, I was going to read a final poem called Angelus, because I was reading poems about. But right next to it is a poem called Election Day. So maybe I'll read that one. Chewy and I went to the same school. He probably doesn't want me to say that. St. Rita. Next time I see him, I'll see if he'll sing our song. I wonder if they beat the shit out of him, too. Election Day. Though decked out in the stars and stripes, the polling place was still a funeral home. But then ours was a precinct of funeral homes, the way some neighborhoods are known for their shoe stores or butcher shops. On election day, the usually phantasmal aldermen were out shaking hands, dressed in black cashmere overcoats like proper mourners. The air smelled of cigars and bars and incense from the church whose doors stood open as if at any moment a coffin might come barging into traffic. A cortege of black caddies lined the toe zones. It might be a deceptive day of two-party weather. One side of the street, Indian summer, December on the other. Especially when wind muscled the shadows that gathered as if the dead were lurking. Lost souls, spirits wandering like drunks, wondering where they'd park their cars. Ghosts, most of them still voting.
Thank you so much, Stuart, and thank you, Sandy, as well. A few announcements, housekeeping things. Our upcoming Carnival of the Animals event is happening at the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Our Hands-on Stanzas program students are participating in a program where they read poems in conjunction with the Carnival of the Animals suite, and they're going to read them on stage with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and that's really exciting. It's happening March 20th and 21st. Can visit our website, and also you can sign up for our newsletter in the back or sign up on our website at poetrycenter.org. Additionally, in April we will be launching a month-long Indiegogo campaign to raise funds for general operations and to promote the Hands-on Stanzas program. That campaign will be bookended by two events. The first is on April 3rd, where we'll have a graduate student reading showcase, including students from DePaul, the University of Chicago, the School of the Art Institute, Columbia College, and Northwestern, and that's going to be really awesome. One of them, Jim Davis, is going to be reading from Northwestern. And then April 29th is our sort of closing bookend, and that is our all-schools reading, where we'll have one student from each of the 31 classrooms that we have the Hands-on Stanzas program in. And as always, we're really grateful to have you here, and campaigns like this are vital to our free public programming and keeping poetry in underserved schools in Chicago. So we hope that at least, even if you can't contribute, that you'll help us publicize that. More information will be coming on our website, and if you sign up for our newsletter, you will surely be bombarded with emails about that. Additionally, if you would like to do an in-person donation, we can take those either tonight or you can contact us further. Our lovely executive director, Beth Sampson, is here if you'd like more information. And yeah, we can field as many questions as you have about that. Again, thank you to our lovely reader, Sandy and Stuart, and have a lovely, safe night.